The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, there are new pressures to ease financial payments for those suffering from mental health, and young people's happiness is the lowest in 10 years. These stories are more coming up. I'll be looking into how mental health causes physical pain, introducing a new take on yoga, and I'll be joined by international writer and therapist Hilary Jacobs-Hendel. Music on the way from Dido and Coldplay, and wise words this week from Albert Einstein. So if good mental health matters to you, then this is a show not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Let's start by taking a look at the mental health news making the headlines this week. Creditors should give people being treated for serious mental health issues more time, MPs say. Labour's Luciana Berger warns of a vicious cycle for people trying to deal with mounting debts whilst getting mental health treatment. Helen Undy, head of external affairs at the Money and Mental Health Policy Institute, said more than 1,700 people had signed a letter to the Chancellor calling for the scheme to be brought in. Also in the news, young people's happiness hits the lowest level in a decade, with half regularly feeling anxious. People aged between 16 and 25 are worrying about their futures, body image, and not being good enough. The happiness and confidence of young people has dropped to its lowest level in a decade, new research from the Prince's Trust suggests. More on this in a few moments. Mariah Carey has spoken for the first time about her 17-year battle with bipolar disorder. The singer revealed she was first diagnosed with the condition in 2001 after a mental breakdown which resulted in her being admitted to hospital. Carey, who has sold 200 million records worldwide, said she has recently sought medical treatment and said it came after the hardest couple of years she's been through. Finally in the headlines, for men who fail to equal parents' achievements, the possibility of suffering mental distress can be quite real, evidence suggests. Failing to match educational accomplishments causes distress similar to a divorce, according to a recent study. Men who fail to match or exceed their parents' educational achievements suffer levels of psychological distress similar to the impact of loss, whilst women are largely unaffected. Researchers at the University of Oxford analysed data from more than 50,000 people across the UK and 27 other European countries to compare their psychological states with their educational achievements. We'll find out more about this story in a moment. So let's take a deeper look at those news stories this week. If you are struggling with your mental health and you have rising debts, the worries of how you're going to pay off these debts can only make you feel worse. One 42-year-old who wanted to remain anonymous told the Independent newspaper, "I think if I could have had that space to breathe, a time to get my mental health in order, then maybe I could have got my financial house in order a lot earlier." When you're struggling to deal with your mental health, it's hard enough to deal with the things you should be paying off. Although you've got yourself into that debt, you have to get yourself out. But it's not a priority when you've got to buy food or pay for gas. He added, "The finance side of things took me to some of the darkest places of my mental health that I've ever been to." I'm sure everyone has experienced some kind of debt in their time, but juggling debt with mental health is likely to be a toxic combination. As we heard in the headlines, Labour's Luciana Berger warns of a vicious cycle for people trying to deal with mounting debts whilst getting mental health treatment. It is estimated that 23,000 people in the UK alone are struggling with debt whilst in hospital receiving mental health treatment. 73 MPs have backed amendments to the Financial Guidance and Claims Bill. Led by Ms Berger, Tory MP Johnny Mercer and former Liberal Democrat Health Minister Norman Lamb, which would extend plans for more breathing space to everybody receiving crisis mental health care. Ministers are considering a 6-week grace period for people in problem debt. But MPs want it extended to cover people accessing mental health crisis care who may lose their jobs or fall behind in payments whilst in hospital. Lee, an IT worker from Greater Manchester who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 2007, said he fell into £32,000 worth of debt after struggling to control his spending during manic episodes. His financial worries led him to attempting suicide twice, while aggressive debt collectors pursued him by climbing into his garden or parking across his driveway to block him into his house. Another bailiff refused to go until Lee handed over his father's credit card details, despite Lee saying he was suicidal. Moving on, research by the Prince's Trust suggests that happiness for young people is at the lowest level for a decade. Those aged 16 to 25 are regularly worrying about their future, body image, and whether or not they are good enough, problems which are causing high levels of anxiety. The charity's annual survey of more than 2,000 respondents aged 16 to 25 found young people's emotional health has dropped to the lowest levels since the study was first commissioned in 2009. Worries about the future, money, body image, and generally not being good enough are piling up on the generation. When asked to describe how they feel, 3 in 5 said they regularly feel stressed, more than half regularly feel anxious, and more than a quarter said they feel hopeless on a regular basis. Furthermore, just under half of young people said they've experienced a mental health problem, a 10% increase since last year. The Wellbeing Index, created with the Macquarie Group Foundation, gauges young people's well-being and listed the overall happiness score as 57, a considerable fall from 2010, when it stood at 70. Meanwhile, almost half of respondents said they worry about their body image, while 35% worry about not having enough friends, and 18% worry about how they come across on social media. Charlie Smith previously told HuffPost UK, experiencing mental illness is incredibly hard as a young person. In your early 20s, you're supposed to be having the best years of your life. You're expected to be going out, partying, travelling, and preparing your dream career. However, my mental health difficulties have made all these things incredibly difficult, she said. I found studying for my degree very difficult due to my mental illnesses. When I should have been in lectures, I've been in hospital appointments. When I should have been writing essays, I've spent my days in bed, so depressed I've been unable to move. It's really difficult when you feel like everyone else is moving forward and you don't feel you are and never will be at the same stage as them. Commenting on the results, Nick Stace, UK chief executive at the Prince's Trust, said the findings should ring alarm bells for us all that young people are feeling more despondent about their emotional health than ever before. This is a generation rapidly losing faith in their ability to achieve their goals in life, who are increasingly wary and disillusioned with the jobs market and at risk of leaving a wealth of untapped potential in their wake, he said. In response to the findings, the Prince's Trust has commissioned mental health charity Young Minds to review some of its programme activity and recommend additional ways of contributing positively to the mental well-being of the young people it supports. If you're a young person and you'd like to talk to somebody about your mental health, you could call The Mind Charity. They are open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. on 0300 123 3393. That's 0300 123 3393. The Samaritans offers a listening service also, which is open 24 hours a day on 116 123 in the UK and the Republic of Ireland. This is a free number to call and will not appear on your phone bill. Knowing that somebody in the public eye is suffering from a mental health condition is, for me, a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's comforting to know that you are not alone. Equally, it is sad to know the people you've looked up to have been barely coping. Who would have known that Mariah Carey, who's been struggling for 17 years with bipolar disorder, Carey, who has sold 200 million records worldwide, said she only recently sought further medical treatment and said it came after the hardest couple of years she's been through. Until recently, I lived in denial and isolation and in constant fear someone would expose me, she explained. It was too heavy a burden to carry and I simply couldn't do that anymore, Carey said. She's now having therapy and taking medication for bipolar disorder, which has caused her to have periods of depression and hypomania, which can cause irritability and insomnia. I'm actually taking medication that seems to be pretty good, she said. It's not making me feel too tired or sluggish or anything like that. Finding the proper balance is what is most important, she told a UK newspaper. She added that for a long time she thought she had severe sleep disorder, but whilst working on her latest album in the studio, she said she was irritable and in constant fear of letting people down, she said. So let's remind ourselves as to what bipolar disorder is. There are different types of bipolar. Those with type 1 experience manic periods of highs and depressive lows. Those with type 2 experience severe depression and mild manic episodes, known as hypomania, that last for a shorter period of time. During a manic episode, those with bipolar disorder can feel euphoric and have lots of energy, ambitious plans and ideas. But they can become aggressive and experience symptoms of psychosis. The exact cause of bipolar disorder is still unknown. Some experts believe it can be developed as a result of severe emotional distress as a child, as well as genetic and chemical factors. One in every 100 adults will be diagnosed with the condition at some point in their life. Finally, men who fail to equal parents' achievements suffer mental distress. But this is not the case in women, a new study reveals. Is this the case for you? The study found that the consequences of doing better or worse than their parents were observed primarily among men rather than among women. The authors of a new report said, "Our research suggests that the role of social gains of intergenerational mobility is much more significant for men than for women." This corroborates some earlier evidence that men's life chances are more related to their social origins than life chances of women. The team of three researchers at Oxford's Department of Social Policy and Intervention at Nuffield College divided educational attainment into three categories. In the UK, top was a degree level, A-levels middle, whilst bottom was GCSEs or lower. They compared this with an overall score for psychological distress. They found that men whose educational achievements were in the bottom level and whose parents were in the top were more than twice as likely to be among the top 10% of most psychologically distressed than those whose educational level matched their parents. The psychological effect of this gap in attainment is comparable with the gap between those who were divorced and those who were not, according to the researchers. Men whose educational level was at the top and whose parents were at the bottom level were 50% likely to be psychologically distressed than men whose level was the same as their parents. For men, parents' educational achievements and intergenerational mobility retain an important influence on their psychological health after accounting for individuals' social class and other explanations of distress. But, as we know, this is not the case for women. Wise words on the way, music from Coldplay still to come, and I'll be introducing you to two great people who are approaching mental health in very different ways.
I haven't ever really found a place that I call home. I never stick around quite long enough to make it. I apologize once again, I'm not in love. But it's not as if I mind that your heart ain't exactly breaking. It's just a thought, only a thought. But if my life is for rent and I don't learn to buy, well, I deserve nothing more than I get, 'cause nothing I thought that I would love to live by the sea, to travel the world alone and live more simply. I have no idea what's happened to that dream, 'cause there's really nothing left here to stop me. It's just a thought, only a thought. Live my life.
As a counsellor, I see many different kinds of mental strain. Whilst I'm not a doctor, I can tell that a person's mental health is having a direct effect on their physical well-being. The connection between mental health and physical pain is very real. And for people who are unaware that their mental health could be a contributing factor, life can be cruel. As an example of this, if you have experienced grief or loss, whether the death of someone close to you or the sudden breakup of a relationship, you'll know that getting out of bed in the morning can be a mental and physical struggle. Your brain is a vital organ, and if you've overworked it, it's going to ache. And with this in mind, it's going to send negative signals to other areas of the body, and this manifests itself as pain. Mental health problems can come with physical aches, pains and symptoms that make life, well, very difficult. They can go undiagnosed and untreated for a long period of time, with people getting caught up in a cycle of tests and appointments. Around 1 in 5 GP appointments are for symptoms that show no results in a test. Here's a recent report from the BBC.
Have you ever felt like this?
Stomach cramps, heart palpitations, feels like your heart's going to explode, it's pounding so hard. It can sometimes feel like somebody's like beating a drum, like really, really loud and hard. I can't. I was breathing faster and faster and faster to try and get more oxygen, but it was making it worse.
You're not alone. Mental health has physical symptoms too, and when you don't know what's going on, it can be really scary.
Going for pain relief regularly, going to the hospitals to different consultants regularly, having lots of tests regularly, having lots of scans regularly.
Sound familiar?
This is their life, and it's a sort of downward spiral for people.
It can feel like your arms and legs are really heavy. A mist comes over my eyes. You feel a bit dizzy and you feel faint. That's really scary.
Tests, scans, consultations, they can all show up nothing when actually you're unwell.
It's not uncommon, is it, for people to have something wrong and then no. just never figure out why that's
happening? It's not. It's a very happening. Common occurrence. One in five GP appointments.
Whoa, one in five?
One in five.
Yep. One in five people go to their GP with a physical symptom, but then nothing shows up on tests.
I've got a tremor in my hands. You see that?
Yeah, yeah.
We're taking a look at how some physical pains and symptoms in our bodies can be linked to mental illness and what you can do. First up, though, we want to know what you've experienced.
Yeah, very, very severe stomach cramps. I had a lot of bowel problems as well.
I was experiencing an incredibly tight chest and shortness of breath, and it just wasn't fading.
A loss of appetite, an inability to have a full night's sleep.
I get very bad like muscle aches and pains.
Profuse sweating.
And was just kind of told to take ibuprofen and hope that it kind of gets better.
It wasn't until I was outside of the hospital and I was reading my discharge letter that I'd seen that they had diagnosed me with a panic attack.
People who have these symptoms start doubting it themselves. Are they going crazy? Because, you know, they keep getting these negative, no, there's nothing wrong with you, and yet they've got bodily experience. But they're not. It's true and it's real and they need to be believed.
This is Helen Payne. She's a professor at the University of Hertfordshire.
They become depressed. They're living, feeling terrified that there's something awful wrong with them, but they just haven't found out what it is yet. Mm. And they're living with the unknown, which is really difficult.
Helen runs the body-mind approach, which supports people with unexplained symptoms by helping them manage the pain first.
Just letting go of any tension.
What is the body-mind approach?
So it's a way of working with people with different unexplained symptoms. So where is the distress? What does it feel like? What's the sensory experience in the body? And actually working from the body to the mind instead of from a mental or cognitive approach to help them learn different strategies that are tailor-made to them to manage their distressing symptom so it's not so distressing day to day. That's the sort of thing.
That's lovely.
And then you go right the way down through the legs to the toes and then people feel so open at the end.
Okay, let's just do my toes quickly because they feel tense.
What does it feel like in your body? Take some clay and I'd like you to model something emanating from that feel.
Good getting your hands in that, isn't it?
Yeah. Quite defensive. A hedgehog puts those prickles out to defend itself. What would the sound be?
That's the noise.
So I wonder what that need to protect is about for you.
I think it's for a full session. Not for Andy in the room.
Of course, it's really important to say that not all unexplained aches and pains are linked to mental health.
There's lots and lots of reasons why people have unexplained symptoms. Mm. And the problem with saying it's mental health is that people don't want to be aligned with the mental health label. The stigma of mental health, although it's a lot better, is still there.
I've been to the doctor so many times over the years when I was a teenager. I think it's interesting that it wasn't picked up then.
Claire lives in Bolton. She was diagnosed with social anxiety 6 years ago, but had never realised that that was what was behind a whole host of physical symptoms.
Because I was always in the doctors, particularly with my stomach at the time. I went saying, like, I can't go in and say, excuse me, I can't stop blushing. So I'm like, what else is there? I feel sick all the time. I remember them asking me if I was pregnant a lot. Like, I went for the tremors at one point, but everything was puberty. I remember that. It's just puberty.
When tests show up as negative, it is incredibly easy for people like Claire to get caught up in appointments, tests and disappointment. I know this because it happened to me. When I was 20, I went through this bit where it felt like my heart was floating in a bag of water and being jumbled around. It felt weird and frightening. The doctor sent me for an ECG or electrocardiogram test. They stuck some cold electrodes on me and I lay back and waited. But the tests came back normal. which was confusing and left me in the dark. There was nothing wrong with my heart.
I actually felt disappointed.
Yes, because even though it's good news, it's not good news.
Yeah, it's not good news. It's and not. I feel really absolutely embarrassed saying
right.
that.
No, no, you're absolutely right. The good news is not good news.
Yeah.
And so then people feel, oh no, it's not that. So I still don't know what's wrong with me. And then they feel more out of control.
Obviously, people can feel quite alone with this. How lonely do people feel?
Well, on a scale to 1 to 10, I would say 10 by the time they've lost family and friends support because they've had the symptom for so long and they talk about it all the time. And obviously, if you're living with the unknown and keep going to the GP and keep going for tests and scans and everything comes back negative, you're going to start feeling a bit low about that. Often you can't tell whether the anxiety depression started first and then the symptom came, or the symptom and then the anxiety depression came. You don't know which came first. I've had some people reporting that they felt on the edge of suicide. The need is overwhelming to provide them with some kind of hope. And so self-management bridges the gap between the NHS reduction in resources and patient high need.
So here are a few kind of easy tips from Helen on how to start trying to manage unexplained symptoms in your body.
Use the soft part and just massage it with your other hand.
Just let the energy fall down through your fingers.
And breathe out through the other one. Singing! What are we going to sing?
Singing!
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Claire struggled with her symptoms like blushing and stomach ache without knowing the cause. That was until she had a panic attack just before a job interview.
I think 24 years of ignoring something, you know, it's eventually going to get out. It physically exploded from my consciousness. Managed to get an appointment and just poured into the office. I was like, this is what's happening. And she's like, yeah, it's social anxiety, and that was a panic attack.
And how did that feel?
I burst into tears, mainly of kind of relief and confusion and all kinds of stuff, because I think all of that stuff I'd been repressing for so long, I was like, what? It can't be that simple. It just can't be. No one can feel this bad and it'd be that simple.
If you think something you're experiencing might be related to your mental health or stress, do speak to your GP. And whilst we can't take the pain away for you, we hope we can leave you feeling a little less alone.
I initially was just offered talking therapies, which obviously have been very, very helpful. And I was offered antidepressants and beta blockers.
It's important to realise that everyone is individual. No two people will experience anxiety in exactly the same way. So listen to what that person needs.
And now that I have my own diagnosis, I can kind of know what I'm feeling when I'm feeling it and what's going on in my head.
In many ways, that diagnosis liberated me and allowed me to go out and tell people what was wrong with me.
And did it help having that diagnosis then?
Oh, God, yes. I think giving anything a name makes it more real and less like it's not all in your head.
This is UK Health Radio. My name's Duncan. It took Gemma years to realise why she was vomiting 3 or 4 times a week. She wasn't suffering from some mysterious stomach illness. Instead, it was her mental health deteriorating. She had generalised anxiety disorder and panic disorder and said, I actually had physical symptoms first, long before I even knew what panic attacks or anxiety were. The 24-year-old student based in London told a UK national newspaper, I suffer particularly badly from gastro issues. I spent years throwing up 3 or 4 times a week, ending up in hospital with no real discernible physical cause. The cause was anxiety expressed physically, she said. Gemma believes that her condition went undiagnosed for so long because of how mental and physical conditions are too often treated as mutually exclusive when they are, in fact, inextricably linked. I think people very much misunderstand the link between physical and mental health, she goes on to say. I was one of those people. I didn't even realise they could be connected when I was a teenager. I thought I was relaxed. Anxiety was the last thing I thought I was suffering from, but I was ignoring a lot of stress and was poor at acknowledging my own emotions. That stress had to come out somewhere, and I almost feel like it was my body trying to get me to listen. Now, Gemma knows that anxiety can cause her severe stomach pains, or that panic attacks are what most often fill her stomach with nausea, cause her arms and legs to go numb and her heart to palpitate. Similarly, Courtney, a 25-year-old publicist based in London, said her depression causes her to feel lethargic and sluggish, and her bones and joints stiff and achy. The bigger problem with physical symptoms is for the anxiety side of things, she said. Outside of panic attacks, a bad flare-up of anxiety gives me absolutely stunning headaches with blurred or double vision, which often makes it hard to work, especially at a computer screen, she tells the Independent newspaper. As the stigma of suffering from mental illness is talked about more widely, these comparatively nuanced aspects of understanding health are what need to be tackled next, say experts. The idea that mental illness is all in your head is not outdated, but can make us blind to the physical symptoms that can be a sign of mental health problems. A spokesperson for mental illness charity Rethink said the idea that mental illness is all in your head is not only outdated, but can make us blind to the physical symptoms that can be a sign of mental health problems. For example, if you have anxiety, you may experience a fast heart rate and sweating. Or for someone living with post-traumatic stress disorder, the flashbacks can cause aches and pains, or make you feel sick. Similarly, depression can affect your appetite, causing you to either lose or gain weight. Eating disorders such as bulimia and anorexia are perhaps the most obvious ways that serious mental illness can affect a person's physical health. In the case of eating disorders, these illnesses may well involve physical symptoms that can become increasingly obvious over time. Depending on the specific illnesses, however, it's important to remember that these are mental illnesses at the root, and the changes to behaviour and mood will probably be noticeable long before any physical signs. A spokesperson for the eating disorder BEAT stresses, it's vital that people are aware of these psychological symptoms as well as the physical ones, as the sooner someone enters treatment for an eating disorder, the better their chance of recovery. It is erasing this confusion that spurs the Mental Health Foundation on to campaign for health checks to include mental health screenings. Men in their 40s are routinely screened for their blood pressure and cholesterol levels when they are more at risk of ending their lives by suicide, points out Dr. Antonis Kasoulis at the Mental Health Foundation, adding, "It's crucial that health screenings cover the health of our minds as well as the health of our bodies." You're listening to me, Duncan Ellison, with The Therapy Suite, playing Coldplay on UK Health Radio.
I'm caught in the middle, so I turn to spider web, it's me in the middle. So I twist and turn, but here am I in my little bubble, singing out, I never meant to cause you trouble, I never meant to do you wrong, now what if I ever caused you trouble, and oh no, I never meant to do you harm.
Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch either on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison or email duncan@thinkduncan.com. Now, I'm really excited to share this next part of the programme. This is something very different on the Therapy Suite, and it fits really well with this week's discussion. We've looked at the different ways in which mental health affects us in a physical way. Let's turn that on its head and explore the positive connection between physical activity and mental health. Over the last 6 months, I've met some amazing people, people who I think add real texture to the programme, which I want to be a mix of therapeutic roots and ideals. Natalie Keeley is one such individual, and I'm going to hand over to her to share some amazing ideas.
Namaste, and welcome to your first instalment of this brand new yogic tools segment with me, Natalie Keeley. I'm a mental wellbeing practitioner, therapeutic yoga coach, and founder of Value Your Mind, a company which uses natural ways such as mindfulness and yoga to help people find more calm and confidence within their mind and life. In this new segment with UK Health Radio, I'll be exploring why yoga is such a powerful tool for mental well-being and how it's helping millions of people find more happiness and calm in their lives. I'm not just talking about what has been popularized as yoga in the West, the physical postures or asanas as we call them in Sanskrit, but I'm talking about yoga in the broader sense. So the philosophy, the mindfulness, teachings, meditation, the many, many breathing techniques, how to just live in harmony with everything around us. I'm talking about the way in which we can integrate yoga into our lives. I like to see yoga like a toolbox with many, many tools in it, which we can use to help soothe our soul and make our lives that little bit easier. So today I'm going to dive straight into that toolbox with you and talk about how yoga and all its many branches actually works on improving the mood and mind. One of my favourite quotes is from Patanjali. He says, "Yoga is the practice of quietening the mind." And I know that sounds really simple, but I really do think it's as simple as that, because it's like we're stripping away those layers of negative thoughts, of judgment or jealousy or insecurities that we all hold on to. Until we get back to ourselves, to our true self. when we go back to our true self, things suddenly become a lot simpler. We feel more clarity in our mind. We maybe feel more energized. Sometimes we feel more motivated to follow our passions. And we also feel more grateful because suddenly we're just present with who we are. Caroline Myce said, "The soul always knows what to do to heal itself, but the challenge is silencing the mind." So with that in mind, I have a question for you. When did you last feel like you were completely connecting back to your true self? This is when you weren't worrying about what people might think, you weren't criticizing yourself, you weren't running around doing a million things at once, and you weren't planning what you should be doing next, or maybe even what people think you should be doing next. But instead, you were just still and listening to your inner voice. It's actually pretty hard to recall, right? Because at the end of the day, we kind of live in this state all the time, and it's almost normalized as just the way we should be. But it's really not healthy for our minds. So I have a little assignment to leave you with. This week, maybe write in your diary or on your phone a time when you can factor in 10 minutes, just 10 minutes, where you're going to find somewhere quiet, and I mean completely quiet, yes, not even listening to health radio in the background, as good as we are, and just going to sit, close your eyes, and listen to what comes up. So you're going to factor 10 minutes where you're going to find somewhere quiet. You're going to sit, close your eyes, and just simply listen to what comes up. And I don't want you to challenge those thoughts or attach any judgment to them, but instead just simply listen and observe. And that's it. So thank you all very much for listening, and I will see you back here next time.
This is UK Health Radio. My name's Duncan. Hello. I'll bring you a new show every 2 weeks. And if you like this show and want more, you can listen to all the different programmes UK Health Radio has to offer. You can choose the live play schedule or download your favourite programme on demand wherever and whenever you need to. As you know, UK Health Radio broadcasts throughout the world, and I have some great friends in many countries who are keen to share their experiences too. Hilary Jacobs-Hendel is a psychotherapist and expert mental health commentator in the States. She also has a private practice in New York, and she's a published author, blogger, and motivational speaker. And it's a real pleasure to have her on the show this week.
We live in a culture where we have epidemic rates of anxiety, depression, and all sorts of other symptoms of psychological unrest, lack of well-being. And we know that our culture is a mind over matter, pick yourself up from your bootstraps, just get over it type of culture. And this is not serving us. We didn't know this years ago, but now we know from all the research with the invention of the MRI and all the research, both psychological and neuroscience research being done, that we need to be in contact with our emotions to feel well. And yet we live in a culture that teaches us to avoid emotions. I wrote It's Not Always Depression to help people understand what emotions are and how to use them so that they feel better and not worse. Life brings up emotions, and core emotions in particular are these inborn, hardwired, energetic experiences that are triggered from the environment. When we like something, when we don't like something, when we're hurt, when we're frightened, when we have a fight with our husband, when someone bumps into us, all these, when our kids criticize us, when we criticize our kids and they walk away, all these different things that happen to us in life trigger emotions, and that's what emotions were invented to do. They help us survive. They tell us, even before we know in our thinking brain, that something has happened to us and these emotions are there to be listened to and tended to. So one of the things that the book aims to do is to really give a simplified but not dumbed down education in emotions, so that when each and every one of us has an emotion, or we're with someone that's having an emotion, that we know how to use that emotion to feel better and not worse, as I said. So for example, every time an emotion is triggered, let's say anger, we have a fork in the road for what to do with it. We can block it with a variety of defenses and inhibitory emotions. Inhibitory emotions are emotions that we use to block our core emotional experience. They are anxiety, guilt, and shame. And anxiety, guilt, and shame in small amounts to keep us connected to our communities and in the good graces of our families and communities is not a problem. But when we are constantly thwarting and blocking our emotions with anxiety, guilt, and shame, it eventually takes a toll on the mind and body. It causes traumatic stress or toxic stress or whatever you want to call it. There's many names. We're hearing a lot about adverse childhood experiences, small t trauma, toxic stress. These are all the results of too much emotional energy being blocked and buried, and it causes pressure and stress on the brain, and it causes stress on the body. And it's not always depression. I teach you what to do when you have an emotion. And the way I do this is by showing you this, how I work with emotions with my patients and my practice. I am introducing a tool called the Change Triangle, which helps you understand how emotions work to take us from relaxed states to highly defended and anxious states, and that we can reverse that process, that when we are disconnected from our emotions and consequently disconnected from other people, we can work our way back down this triangle, right? The point of the triangle is in our body, where these core emotions get triggered, and we can learn how to listen to our emotions and let them flow to move us to back to a state of peace and calm where the body wants to be. And in the book, there are exercises that you can try, because you can't think your way through an emotion. You have to experience it. And there's also some explanations of the scientific literature, but in a very simplified form. I don't believe in putting jargon in writing because I want everybody to understand it. So in a nutshell, It's Not Always Depression is a full education in emotions and how to use them to move past depression, anxiety, shame states like feeling small and a lack of confidence, and to restore a sense of calm, connection, and clarity, peace of mind, and balance to our brain and body, which helps us meet all the challenges of life much, much better.
For more information about Hilary's book, check out her website, www.hilaryjacobshandel.com. You can also buy a book, It's Not Always Depression, priced at £11.34 on Amazon. Albert Einstein provides this week's wise words and something to think about. He goes on to say, "I am enough of an artist to draw freely upon my imagination. Imagination is more important than knowledge. Knowledge is limited. Imagination encircles the world." If you do have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised in today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well, keep smiling, and see you next time.